WWE came to Germany for its first ever PLE in the country and had what it claimed was the highest grossing arena show in the history of the company anywhere. Anywhere in the world. I think about how long WWE has been around for. And so they set that record here with this PLE, and that is only with 13,000 people. Now, they've had arena shows that have a lot more than 13,000 people, so I can only imagine what the ticket prices must have been for this show. I would love to hear from people who were at the show what they paid for their ticket, because I could just only imagine what they were charging on some of these seats. Triple H left the event early to go see his oldest daughter off to college. Triple H's oldest daughter is in college. How the hell did that happen? So Cody Rhodes took his spot in the post-show press conference, you know, where Triple H normally comes out and he gives all the stats on the event, how good the event did. And so Cody was out there and he talked about the fact that this is the third time that this has happened this year. First time they set the gross gate gross record was in May when they were in France for Backlash. They set it again in June for Clash of the Castle when they were in Scotland. And now they just set it again here in Berlin. It's all these international shows. These places in many cases have, that rhymes, these places have never had PLEs before in some cases, right? France, Germany. These different places are starved for a big event like this. So, of course, the novelty of it. People want to come out. They want to be a part of it. They want to be in the crowd, part of that atmosphere. It's like a party atmosphere at a lot of these international shows. And that's why they're setting all these records. Now, these five-match international cards, they've worked so far because the action has been good, right? The action has been largely good to very good. The crowds have been hot. Like I said, the novelty of it, crowds go nuts, especially when they have some of these homegrown talents that are able to be in the main event. Drew McIntyre in Scotland is one example. Gunther tonight, right? Germany, not that far from Austria. So he's got his share of fans. Plus, he spent a good portion of his career wrestling in Germany anyway. So they look at him like you know, the prodigal son returns. So these shows have worked so far. I do wonder, though, if they can keep this up for the long term. The five-match card format, not really rocking the boat. Because the thing is, you know, with these shows, and I'm not even saying the shows are bad. They've largely been good to very good. But they don't necessarily feel important. This show, I think, suffered from the same thing. It didn't feel important. I was looking forward to it. But there was, a lot of predictable matches on the card. When you look at it, you can kind of just visualize how things are going to go. And it went exactly the way that I thought it would. You know, when I did my predictions, I nailed every single one. Not that that makes me special. I'm sure most people watching this right now probably also guessed right off, you know, how a lot of these matches were going to go, who was going to come out on top. And that is, you know, that's been one criticism about these, you know, international cards that they've done this year. And I just don't know, you know, how much longer can they continue on like this for? I guess as long as they could find locations that have not had big shows, they can continue to do it. I do think at some point, though, it's going to run, they're going to run into a situation where these may not work as well as they have worked for them so far. They may not be setting the records that they're setting so far. So that may be the biggest critique, is how predictable these shows are. I say it all the time, though, predictable does not always mean bad. There were matches on WrestleMania this year that were very predictable. That does not mean that it was a bad match or a bad show. This was not a bad show. It was a fun way to spend 3 hours. I had fun watching this show. I thought it was largely a good show. We had Gunther in the main event with Randy Orton. We did not know coming into this whether or not they were going to get the headline spot. I know they wanted it. Randy Orton was very vocal about wanting to be in the main event. He had not main evented a PLE, at least in a singles match, in 4 years. So this was a spot that Randy Orton has not been in for a very long time. And it's a spot that Gunther has, I don't think he's ever been in this spot before. So this was new for him. And I'm glad they got the main event spot. It was the right choice. It was the right match to go on to close out the show. And I will tell you, the match they had, I thought it was very good. But the thing that separates this match from almost every single match, maybe every single match that I have seen this year, whether it be WWE or AEW or any promotion that I have seen, the selling in this match was masterful. The selling in this match was better than any other professional wrestling match that I can remember seeing this year. Because you had Gunther selling his arm, you had Randy Orton selling his back, and he's, you know, an expert seller anyway. But that was the story they were telling throughout that main event. And there were parts of that main event that were dragging a little bit. I think Randy Orton legitimately spent about 65% of that match just admiring the crowd reaction. He had a big smile on his face. At one point, the crowd was doing a wave. He started doing a wave, too, because it ended, and he wanted them to, like, continue. So Randy Orton was out there. He was having a ball. He said coming into this show that he was bringing his wife. He was flying his wife over to Berlin because he wanted her to be in the building for the atmosphere and for the experience of that match, because he knew the crowd was going to be wild for it, and they were, and I'm sure it was special to be there in the building for it. But again, I thought the job that those two guys did, just telling a story through those two, you know, body parts and the injuries they were nursing in that match, that to me was the real story of that main event tonight. And Gunther comes out on top to the surprise of no one, still the World Heavyweight Champion. Randy Orton now can go back to SmackDown. Speaking of SmackDown, we had Cody Rhodes defending the WWE Championship against Kevin Owens, his dear friend. Would he still be a friend when this match was over? That was the story for this match. Can Kevin Owens be trusted? Is Kevin Owens going to turn on Cody Rhodes? Are we going to see the old Kevin Owens? If we had, he might be the champion right now. But because we didn't, he's not. I don't think this story is over. This story has yet to fully play itself out. And there's been a lot of talk about Solo Sikoa. Solo Sikoa was on SmackDown last night in a promo saying, whoever wins this match, I got next. I think I know how this might play out, how it should play out, and I'm going to talk about that when we get to this opening contest here in a second. CM Punk and Drew McIntyre, they've been feuding for this entire year, ever since the Royal Rumble when Punk went down with the torn tricep. They had their first meeting at SummerSlam. The match they had here on this card in Berlin was better than the match they had a few weeks ago at SummerSlam. And it still feels to me, and I don't know if I'm the only one who feels this way, but it still feels to me like a little something is missing. I don't know what it is. I mean, these two have had a blood feud now for the majority of this year. The social media comments and the promos and the insults and the burns back and forth and Drew McIntyre posting a photo with Jack Perry. I mean, think of all the things that we've seen from these two men. And I'm still waiting for them to go balls to the wall and just try to tear each other to shreds. We didn't get that really at SummerSlam. It was better here, but I still feel like they're holding back a little bit for what this should really be. We're going to get a third match. We're probably going to get a third match inside Hell in a Cell, and perhaps they're saving the best for last. But I thought their match here on this show was definitely better than the one that they had a few weeks ago. And CM Punk evens things up, one win apiece. It's got to be a rubber match now, got to break the tie somehow. So again, up and down this card, which was not very big to begin with, very predictable finishes, but I think they largely did the right thing, even with Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley and the Judgment Day. What they did, I thought, set the table nicely for Bad Blood, which is coming up in October. But also, we have SmackDown, the big premiere coming on USA Network on September 13th, and I have a feeling that I know what direction they're going in for that show as far as the big main event. We're going to talk about all of that, then I'm going to get you out of here. This is a rare Saturday afternoon stream. This is your WWE Bash in Berlin 2024 review. I am the Solemn Monster. Wade Barrett and Michael Cole, they were our announce team here for this show. They handle commentary as they did on SmackDown last night. For those of you who don't know, starting on Monday, Joe Tessitore debuts on WWE commentary. He and Wade will be handling the commentary duties on Monday nights. Michael Cole and Corey Graves, in preparation for the pending SmackDown return to USA Network, are going to be handling the commentary on Friday nights, including for the final SmackDown on Fox. Thankfully, thank God, SmackDown on Fox done after this Friday. We'll throw a party. come to the stream on Friday. I'm going to be back from Chicago. We're going to be live on Friday night. We could have a party. Maybe I'll even bust out the party hat for the final SmackDown on Fox. No more blackouts. That'll be nice. So Michael Cole and Corey Graves are going to be handling SmackDown for a few months. Once Raw moves to Netflix in January, it's going to flip. Cole and Pat McAfee are going to be back at the table on Monday nights. So that is the commentary situation going forward in WWE. Whichever world title match headlined the show, you had to expect that the other one was going to open the show on a card that only had five matches anyway. And so that was the honor given to Cody Rhodes and Kevin Owens, because if you're not last, you want to be first. So they were the first out here, WWE Championship on the line. Owens last night, if you missed SmackDown, and I'm sure some of you did because it was a very missable show. SmackDown's been pretty fucking boring lately. But last night on the show, the highlight of the show probably was Owens and Cody in the ring together. Had a little face-off, final showdown here before their match here on the show. And Kevin Owens brought up something that has not been mentioned up to this point. He brought up the fact that Cody Rhodes has been nursing a knee injury on the recent European tour. Said Talon in the back has seen Cody limping around. They've seen him spending an hour in the trainer's room every night. Cody didn't want to talk about it. Cody did not want to admit that he had an injury. He did not want to admit weakness. Owens kept bringing it up. And the parting words that Owens had for Cody, he whispered in his ear at the very end of that segment was, just remember, you asked for this. That was the warning that he gave Cody Rhodes on SmackDown last night. So now these two come out here. And of course, the German fans are going nuts, because this is their first ever PLE. They want to make a good impression. They're there to have fun. I'm sure for the prices they probably paid for their tickets, yeah, I'd want to have fun too. So they start chanting "In your face" in German, which apparently, from what I understand, all my German fans out there, is a common wrestling chant for wrestling events over in Germany. I don't know why. I don't know where it started, but that's what they were chanting, "In your face." So before these two even touched, they were going crazy. The two of them then shook hands, and we were off to the races. We had dueling chants of Kevin Owens, Cody Rhodes. The two of them went for their finishers. 5 minutes into this, both men escaped. And it was, I would say, fairly slow, deliberate pace for the first several minutes. They traded momentum back and forth for a while. Cody sank it, a figure four leg lock in the middle of the ring. Owens, though, got to the ropes for a break. With Cody on the apron, Owens shoulder blocked Cody to the floor and then followed that up with a frog splash from the apron. Cody got his snap power slam before hitting a disaster kick for a two count. Cody went for a Cody cutter, but Owens caught him for a German suplex, very appropriate given what country they were in. Cody responded with a Cody cutter for a two count. Owens went to the top and Cody cut him off. But Owens scooped him up onto his shoulders, hit a rolling senton off the top rope for a near fall. Cody thwarted a stunner attempt and hit a crossroads for a good near fall. Owens got placed on the top turnbuckle, but he landed a fisherman's brainbuster to Cody from the second rope, which got another good near fall. So the two went back to trading strikes on their feet. Cody went to run the ropes for a top rope Cody cutter, but his knee buckled. His knee buckled, and so he climbed back down to his feet, and he sold pain in the bad knee. So Kevin Owens was right. Cody was hiding an injury. He's got a bum knee. And Owens saw it right away, and the camera showed his face, and he's staring at the knee. His eyes are getting all wide. He wants to attack the knee. He could not bring himself to do it. And so you would look at this, and you might say, well, this is stupid. I mean, we're on a PLE here. The WWE Championship is on the line. You see that your opponent has a weakness, right? That's his Achilles heel. It's his knee. Go after the knee. Why is he not going after the knee? Well, the story they tried to tell on SmackDown last night is, yeah, they pointed out the fact that it's been 8 years, almost to the day, that Kevin Owens won the Universal Championship, which is the only top title he has won on the main roster. It's been 8 years since he won that title. And it bothers him to this very day that people say, and this is how they're pitching the storyline, that, well, it was Triple H who won the belt for him. He had Triple H's help. He had the assist from Triple H, and so he doesn't deserve it. You know, he didn't deserve to be the Universal Champion. And it's something he said that bothers him to this day. He came into this match not wanting any excuses. He wanted Cody at his best. That's why he kept trying to bring up the knee injury, and Cody didn't want to talk about it. Cody said, wait, are you trying to get out of this match because you didn't want it in the first place? But Owen said, look, man, I don't want any excuses here when I beat you. So he stopped himself. He did not want to make the knee any worse. So they ended up on the floor outside. Owens did finally kick Cody in the bad knee, but then when he set him up for an apron powerbomb, he stopped short. He couldn't do it. Couldn't bring himself to do it. Wade Barrett is on commentary throughout this entire thing. He is losing his mind. What are you doing? Why are you holding back? Go after him. Powerbomb him. What are you doing? The title's on the line here. And Kevin Owens hears him, and he tells him to shut up, which was funny, and then he gets back in the ring. So back inside, Owens hit a stunner. Cody kicked out. Cody came back with a crossroads, not once but twice. But when Cody went for a third one, Owens avoided it and hit another stunner. And again, Cody kicked out. This stretch right here of moves that I just mentioned, this was the worst part of the match. And I'll talk about why in a second. Owens went to the top. He went for a swanton. Cody got his knees up, though. From there, Cody hit one more crossroads. And he pinned Kevin Owens to retain the WWE title. This went right around 23 minutes, so they had time. After the match, Cody extended a hand to help Owens up. Owens ignored him. Eventually, he gave Cody a hug. Also slapped the camera away, because the camera was right up in their face, so he smacked the camera away. Owens raised Cody's arm. Cody tried to raise his arm. Kevin said no. And he raised Cody's arm again, and they left together. In fact, Cody posted a video on his Twitter of them being good friends as Owens and Cody walk to the back arm in arm like old pals. I thought that this was an excellent match. It was all built around the story of Cody's injured knee that they only first introduced on television the night before, less than 24 hours earlier. In the end, the story is that Owens just did not have the killer instinct. Simple as that. He held back because Cody is his friend, and because he didn't want Cody to have any excuses, you know, for losing. So he held back. He couldn't go in for the kill shot. Could not bring himself to do it. And in the end, that's what cost him the match. The old Kevin Owens would not have had an issue. He was a ruthless son of a bitch. The old Kevin Owens right now would be the WWE champion. But we don't see the old Kevin Owens here. This is the new lame Kevin Owens, who does not go in for the kill on his opponent. But if ever there was an opening for there to be a heel turn and to bring out the old Kevin Owens, this right here was it. I'm actually glad they didn't do it here. They teased it. They wanted you to think it was going to happen. Even after the match, I thought there was a chance it might happen. But it didn't happen, and I'm glad it didn't happen, because now they can save it for a few weeks from now, a month from now, however much longer we have to wait, they can save it for TV. But go back and take a look at the look on Kevin Owens' face when he was hugging Cody, you know, when the match was over and he was kind of just looking straight ahead. Go back and take a look at the expression on his face, and I think that tells the entire story. That really says volumes. Cody asked him last night on TV, am I still going to have a friend when the match is over? Are you and I still going to be friends? Probably not for much longer. The only thing I didn't like, I said there was one stretch here of the match that I did not like. We had Cody Rhodes, who is supposed to be the top star in the company. He's supposed to be the top champion in this company, right? WWE champion. We had Cody Rhodes out there hitting his finishing maneuver, not once, but twice. Now, we've seen him have to hit it three times to put people away, which is kind of ridiculous. That's what he did with Roman Reigns when he beat Roman at WrestleMania. But he hits two crossroads. And then Kevin Owens just shoves off the third one and hits a stunner like it had no effect on him. He basically just completely no-sold two crossroads. That's ridiculous. Then he used the stunner, not once, but twice. He uses the stunner, and both times Cody kicks out. I didn't like that either. But the crossroads thing is really what annoyed me. Because again, this is your top guy. Can you imagine another top star in a similar situation, hitting their finish, and then hitting their finish a second time, And we're not even talking about a dramatic kick out or anything like that. Just the way that Owen shoved off and just went to the next spot. Again, some people may look at it and go, it's a nitpicky thing. It's not that big of a deal. It's not a huge deal, but it definitely bugged me. And I wish that they didn't do that. I wish they were a little more protective of these moves, even the stunner. I wish they were a little more protective. So that would be my only critique of this match, honestly. That's the only thing that annoyed me about this match. Otherwise, I thought that it was an excellent match. Now we look ahead. Some people might say, well, I guess now it's on to Cody and Solo. And then we just wait for Randy Orton to come back to SmackDown and see when they want to kick off the feud with Orton and Cody. I'm waiting for that as well. Roman Reigns was advertised just a couple of weeks ago. He was advertised for the first SmackDown back on USA on September 13th. And then his name was pulled from the list of talent on WWE.com that was advertised for that show. I don't think that it's necessarily because he's not going to be on the show. I think it's because they didn't want him advertised for the show. And we may see a surprise appearance, a surprise return. That night would make a lot of sense from the last time we saw him get beat down by the Bloodline. I think the match that we're going to get on September 13th is Solo Sikoa against Cody Rhodes. I don't think they're going to wait until Bad Blood. I hope to God they're not waiting until Bad Blood and doing a rematch from SummerSlam when people didn't even want to see that match in the first place. But as a television main event, Cody defending the WWE Championship, that's a big deal because we don't get to see that very often on TV. I'd much rather see that on television than see it on the next PLE, which we have to wait another 5 weeks for. I don't want to go through the entire month of September building to another Cody Rhodes Solo Sikoa match. Do it in 2 weeks on SmackDown. And on that show, I think we will get the return of Roman Reigns, but I think we also may get the heel turn for Kevin Owens. I think you could pull both of those things off. I mean, you want to make that first SmackDown back on USA a big deal. You want some shit to go down. You have the return of Roman Reigns at the end of that WWE title match. And Kevin Owens finally does go heel. He finally does return to the dark side. We get a rematch with Cody and Kevin at Bad Blood in October. This thing, you know, what they did here, this is tailor-made for a second match. At least one more match. They have to do it. Whether Owens goes heel or not, there has to be a second match. I mean, that's the vibe I got at the end of this. And again, just the look on his face. That expression on his face when they zoomed in on Owen's face. I mean, this is tailor-made for a rematch between these two. But I think we get the heel turn before we get the rematch. How does that affect Randy Orton? I don't know. Because I do think long-term, the idea should be Randy Orton going heel. And him challenging Cody for the title and possibly winning it. As I've said, if it were up to me, Orton would beat Cody to win the championship. And I think he should do that as a heel. Doesn't mean that Owens and Orton can't both go heel at different times. They have a serious need for more heels at the top of the card on SmackDown. So turning Owens and possibly turning Orton maybe, you know, after that wouldn't be the worst idea in the world. You know, I didn't know if they would want to have both of them go heel of the two if you only had one choice. Personally, yes, I would go with Randy Orton, but I think Kevin Owens is going to go heel. Didn't happen here tonight, but I think it's coming. And I would love to see the two of them mix it up one more time, but this time Owens doesn't hold back. This time we get the Kevin Owens of old. I think we're going to get that at Bad Blood. We had Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn against Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill for the WWE Women's Tag Team titles. Bianca and Alba, they fought over Bianca's braid at one point. They were having a tug of war. Isla ran in, the heels took over. All four women ended up outside after Alba hit a rough suicide dive that knocked Jade backwards into the barricade. It was one of these things where Jade left the ring and she's kind of walking. She's looking at the other women. Doesn't see, maybe out of her peripheral vision, but she doesn't see Alba like a rocket soaring out of the ring. And she kind of like grabbed her by the neck and took her backwards into the barricade. Back inside, the champions worked over Bianca for a little while. They cut off her attempt to tag out to Jade. She finally got the hot tag. Jade went to work on both of them. Bianca ended up back in, fell victim to Fyre and Dawn's finish, but Jade broke up the pin attempt. Bianca and Jade planted Alba with a double team move and got a two count out of it. Isla tagged in, went for a splash on Bianca, but she moved and Alba landed on her partner. Friendly fire. Bianca and Jade then won the titles with their combination assisted DDT into the German suplex by Jade. We've seen them use that move before. You had to know. I mean, the moment this match was announced, why would anybody believe this was going to go any other way? You had to know that the entire purpose of even doing this match was to get the belts back onto Bianca and Jade. And there were people thinking, well, maybe there'll be a heel turn. Maybe Jade is going to turn on Bianca or Bianca is going to turn on Jade. Why would they do that now? We're heading into the fall. To me, that's going to be the WrestleMania match. The way things are shaping up, if I had to venture a guess, I think there's a much better chance of getting Bianca against Jade than Bianca against Rhea, which is another match I would love to see. But we're not close enough yet, I think, to do that. I think you got to wait a little bit longer if that's the plan. You got to wait until we get closer to Royal Rumble season. I wouldn't even think of doing anything before that. So this was the most predictable outcome. I would say this, honestly, to me, was probably more predictable than any other match on the show, even the two title matches. Like, how could you imagine this was going to go any other way? The reality is this. The only reason Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn even won those tag team titles at Clash at the Castle, okay, the only reason that that title change even happened was because Drew McIntyre was losing to Damian Priest. And they wanted to have a title change. They wanted to pop the crowd there in Scotland. That's the only reason those belts ended up on their waist. And good for them. They got a little run with it. It's more than Triple H or anybody has done with these two since they've been called up to the main roster. But looking back at it now, it's pretty clear that's the only reason why they ended up with those belts. So now Bianca and Jade have the belts back. They have the same problems WWE does that they have always had with these belts, which is that there really is not much of a division to speak of. Now, Bianca and Jade, they have the titles because I believe it's going to be part of their story when it comes time to split them up for WrestleMania. So this isn't even so much about the titles. The titles are being used as a prop to keep them together for a while so that they can establish their friendship and establish their partnership and set up for that day when it finally comes that there is a miscommunication or somebody gets jealous. However it's going to go down, maybe one eliminates the other in the Women's Royal Rumble match. Maybe it kicks off there. Maybe that's the spark. But that's the reason why they have these belts. These belts are being used as a way to promote the eventual singles match between these two. The match itself was good. I would maybe go 3 out of 5. 2 3/4 out of 5. I'd maybe go 3. Jade, though, she continues to gain confidence in the ring. I've said it before. I think that they have created a situation where Jade Cargill has the best hot tag in the entire company. And it's smart, you know, to use her in that way and really build her up as some kind of superwoman so that when she tags in, she gets to run wild and do all the big power spots. I think it's smart. It's a smart way to use her right now. We had CM Punk and Drew McIntyre, one-on-one in a strap match. This was the touch the turnbuckle rules. So there were no pinfalls, there were no submissions. They had poles. They had poles, bro. Bro, you had poles in all four corners. And these poles had lights on them. They had red lights and they had green lights. They had red lights to indicate when Drew McIntyre would touch a top turnbuckle. They had green lights to indicate when CM Punk would touch the top turnbuckle. And the objective was to touch all four turnbuckles, touch all four in succession without interruption, and you win the match. So basically, traditional WWE strap match rules. CM Punk walks out here in Berlin. And he's wearing his gear from last year's All In show at Wembley Stadium. And I'm just thinking to myself, it must be his good luck gear. I mean, he did win, right? He did beat Samoa Joe on that show. He also tried to murder Jack Perry in those tights. Those are his lucky tights. I noticed it straight away. As soon as I saw him walk out with the stars on the gear and the boots, I said, ah, All In. Hopefully he washed the blood off. So McIntyre attacked Punk when he was still on the apron during his entrance. So they were not even yet attached at the wrist. McIntyre slammed Punk down on top of the German announce desk. and then started whipping him with the strap. Match had not even officially started yet. Finally, they went and rang the bell. Punk managed to hit an early go to sleep. They ended up outside. Punk backdropped him on onto the announce desk, which did not break. And then he started whipping McIntyre. They went under the ring, did CM Punk. He dragged out a table. McIntyre attacked him, stuffed the table back under the ring, which the fans did not like. And they ended up back inside. There was a chair that he had introduced, and it was laying on the mat. McIntyre slammed Punk onto the chair, and you could see that Punk was opened up on the forehead. We got some color in this match. And I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, wait a minute, no, save it. save it for Hell in a Cell. Don't give it away now. If you're going to bleed, you got to bleed inside the cage. It wasn't a lot, though. By the time the match was over, most of it had washed away. It wasn't even there anymore. But we got a little bit of color. So McIntyre wedged a chair in the corner, but Punk dropped him with a running bulldog, and again, they ended up on the floor. Punk grabbed the table again, set it up on the outside. But when they got back in the ring, McIntyre dropped him with a claymore kick. So Drew started slapping turnbuckles, but got sent into the chair that he himself wedged in between the ropes in the corner. So when that happens, you have to start all over again. So all the lights, they go out. Punk touched three turnbuckles after this, but he got cut off. So again, they reset the lights. Punk hit the step-up knee strike in the corner. Normally, when he hits the step-up knee, he grabs the guy by the head. He comes out of the corner with the running bulldog. But in this case, Drew held on to him, lifted him up, and dumped him out over the top rope. And Punk goes crashing safely through the table that had been set up outside. Back in the ring, McIntyre got Punk on his shoulders. He touched one turnbuckle, did not realize, though, that Punk touched the other one. Same thing in the second corner. McIntyre touches the turnbuckle, so does CM Punk. Doesn't realize that it's happening. So the next one to touch wins, right? We got three of them lit up. The next person who touches that fourth turnbuckle is going to win the match. But they broke the momentum again, and so again, everything reset. McIntyre went for another claymore. Punk, though, delivered a kick at the exact same time, and we got a double down. Punk then applied a terrible sharpshooter. The best compliment that I can pay it is that it was still better than The Rock's sharpshooter, where it always looked like Rock was in more pain than his opponent. It looked like he was trying to shit a brick. He was either severely constipated or perhaps was trying to pass a kidney stone. So it was better than that, but it was still pretty fucking bad. I mean, if Bret Hart was watching this, and Bret Hart of all people, I mean, CM Punk is, kind of like FTR. He's a huge Bret Hart mark. For shame. I mean, he brought shame and disgrace onto this move here. I'm sorry, but he did. And yet, Drew McIntyre is still tapping out. But there's no submission, so it doesn't count. So Punk got up, and he touches one turnbuckle. And then Punk goes and he touches a second turnbuckle. McIntyre, though, yanks him back in and drops him with a neck breaker. McIntyre kips up. Now, maybe not the best thing to be doing after you were just selling pain from a sharpshooter, but he kips up. Then he pulls out the bracelet. And, yeah, Punk's beloved bracelet. He kisses it, he puts it on, then he sets up for a claymore, and he connects flush with the claymore kick. So then he goes and he touches one turnbuckle. He touches the second one. He touches a third one. Now there's only one left. Punk, though, pulls him in, nails him with a GTS. And just like that, we're right back to square one here in this match. Punk stood up. Drew grabs him by the ankle out of desperation. Punk looks down. He spots the bracelet on his wrist. So he picks him up and delivers another GTS. Punk touches one turnbuckle, drags him over, touches a second one. Then he picks him back up, gives him one more GTS, because why not? May as well make sure he's knocked out. So there's another GTS. Now he smacks the third turnbuckle. And now with one to go, McIntyre is out, but he pulls him back up again for one final GTS. And Punk then pulls the bracelet off McIntyre's wrist. He smacks the fourth buckle, and he wins the match. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. I was talking before about the new Vince McMahon docuseries coming to Netflix in a few weeks. You want to hear something that'll blow your mind? Netflix has more than 18,000 titles globally, but less than half of those are actually available to watch in the U.S. You're paying for Netflix and missing out on literally thousands of shows and movies. That is, unless you use ExpressVPN, like I do. Netflix hides content from you based on your location. How ExpressVPN allows you to get around this is it lets you change your online location so you control where you want Netflix to think that you're located. They have servers in over 100 countries, so you can easily gain access to thousands of hours of content and never run out of stuff to watch. And it's not just Netflix that it works with. It works on other streaming services too, like Disney+. What makes ExpressVPN the best VPN? For one, it's easy to use. You don't need to jump on YouTube and scroll for instructional videos on how to use the damn thing. Just pull up the app, click one button, and change locations, and you're done. That's it. It also works on all your devices, phones, laptops, tablets, smart TVs. You all have smart TVs, right? You don't have dumb TVs. If you do have dumb TVs, you need to buy yourself a smart TV. It's 2024. What are you doing using a dumb TV anyway? But that's the beauty of it. Even if you don't have one, it'll work on all your other devices. It's super fast, too. There's a reason it's rated number one by top tech websites like CNET and The Verge. I've mentioned that The Dark Knight is my favorite movie. I absolutely love it. But it's not on Netflix in the US anymore. Hasn't been for a while. I actually have it on DVD, but it's a pain in my ass to plug in my DVD player. You know what I did? I used ExpressVPN to switch my location to Australia, and I watched The Dark Knight on Netflix in Australia. I love playing around with it to see what I can get access to. And when I saw that, I said, you know what? I think it's time for a rewatch. And literally, all I had to do to unblock the movie was open ExpressVPN, select Australia, tap one button to connect, refresh Netflix, and there it was. Anybody can do it. So be smart. Stop paying full price for streaming services and only getting a fraction of their content. Get your money's worth at expressvpn.com/solomonster. Don't forget to use my link at expressvpn.com/solomonster to get an extra 3 months of ExpressVPN for free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. So CM Punk is victorious, but the bigger story here, it's not even so much that CM Punk just won his first WWE match in over 10 years. The big story here is that CM Punk has now gone two matches without an injury. Yes, the counter, as you can see here, is now up to two. Let's hope that he can keep it going. I thought this was better than their SummerSlam match. I enjoyed this more than the SummerSlam match. This had an intensity, I thought, that the SummerSlam match was lacking. I don't know if it was just Seth Rollins, and that was kind of something of a distraction. Maybe it took away a little bit from the match. I don't think you can blame it all on Seth Rollins and the whole referee gimmick, though. I just think right when they came out of the shoot at SummerSlam, for a blood feud like this, there just was an intensity that was not there. It was better here, and yet I still sit here and feel like something is still missing. It's still not quite as heated, given the nature of this feud, as it should be. And perhaps they're saving it. Perhaps we will get that inside the cell, if they end up in the cell, which I can't imagine they won't. Of all the, certainly all the men's feuds right now, the one that deserves to be in the cell would be that one. But I like the little touch there at the end with the bracelet, Punk getting the bracelet back. I think we can end the bracelet chapter, I hope, of this story. Because I was okay with what they did at SummerSlam. I know some people weren't. Some people thought it was dumb. I didn't mind it. It was part of the story, right? When you have the context in mind, it made sense what they did. I don't think we need to belabor the point, though, with this whole bracelet stuff. I think we can put a period on that now and move on. Punk has it back. But now they're knotted up at one win apiece. So Hell in a Cell coming in October. Here's my question. Can they keep us interested enough in seeing a third match? Because they got 5 weeks now. I don't know what they're going to do in these next 5 weeks to really ratchet up the intensity and keep us interested in wanting to see them get in the ring for a third time. Because in many ways, I think that the build-up to this and the promos and the social media stuff, that's been more enjoyable than the matches themselves. And the matches haven't been bad. But I think all of that stuff is what's been really fun about these two feuding. But now they really have to pay this off in a big way because this has been going on for months. So Bad Blood is going to be a big night for the two of them. Do we get an AJ Lee cameo on TV? Do they introduce AJ back onto television? Is she going to be part of this? Is it going to get even more personal on the part of Drew McIntyre? Maybe. That might be the way to go. We had Damian Priest and Rhea Ripley against Dominic Mysterio and Liv Morgan. We got our own little mixed match challenge here. Rhea, super over. Damian Priest was over too, but Rhea Ripley was over on just another level from everybody else. Really on this show, maybe, except Gunther. She was super over. It was all Priest and Rhea until Dominic drove Priest into the steel steps outside. Rhea tagged back in. Fans went nuts when she went after Dom. Now, the rules were man on man, woman on woman. But Rhea was in the ring at one point. She looked over. Dominic was still, like, recovering in the corner. And when he got to his feet, turned around, saw Rhea, was begging off. He wanted a hug. She started kicking his ass. She's clotheslining him over and over again. I think she picked him up and slammed him down. So she even got her legs wrapped around his neck and started squeezing and choking poor Dom. Remember when she did that to him? That was early in the early days here, before she corrupted this young man. She had him in the corner. I remember it. She had him, the legs wrapped around everybody on social media. It should have been me. It should have been me. Right, Dolph Ziggler? It should have been me. So she wraps her thighs around his neck and starts squeezing, and everybody in the building is going nuts, probably thinking the same thing. It should have been me. How do you say it should have been me in German? Get me the translation. I bet you more than half that crowd was thinking that at that exact moment. So she tried for a riptide on Dom. Morgan, though, pulled him to safety again. Priest and Ripley, they did a double razor's edge spot to Liv and Dom, which was very cool. So then the Judgment Day hit ringside. You knew it was going to happen. JD McDonagh tried to interfere. Priest, though, knocked him off the apron. Ripley got Carlito on her shoulders outside, dropped him face first down on the apron. Morgan then flew in off the ring steps with a sunset bomb that sent Rhea backwards. She bashed the back of her head into the barricade. McDonagh distracted the referee as Finn Balor flew in and hit Priest with a sling blade. Dominic followed with a 619 and a frog splash for a close near fall. Ripley went after Liv, but McDonagh distracted the referee, so Priest shoulder checked him and he went flying over the announce desk. Priest then super kicked Balor when he spotted Balor was running in towards him. Dominic, though, hit a suicide dive that sent Damian backwards. So now he's laid out on top of the announce desk. Dominic gets up on the announce desk, and then he walks onto the German announce desk, and he comes charging in back to the English announce desk. Priest is back up. He turns him inside out with a clothesline, and Dominic falls. Table still does not break. Liv, though, finds herself all alone in the ring. Her back is turned, but Rhea Ripley is right behind her, and she knows. She knows that the monster is behind her, and she turns around, and Rhea ends up hitting her with Riptide and gets the win. This was a lot of fun. If I had one word to sum up this match, it was fun. As many of the segments have been on TV the last few weeks, those segments have been getting great heat. You know, when Priest and Rhea are out there and they're fighting off the different members of the Judgment Day, this match got very chaotic down the stretch, but it was fun. And I thought it was a good match. Priest and Ripley, you got to remember, they came out of SummerSlam as losers. Priest lost his championship to Gunther. He got betrayed by Finn Balor. Rhea Ripley lost in her bid to win back the women's world title and was betrayed by Dominic Mysterio. They needed this win. They had to get back on you know, to their winning ways here. So no surprise that they picked up the win and Rhea pinned Liv. So now she's got a good case to make for why she deserves a rematch for the Women's World Championship, which I'm sure she's going to get at Bad Blood. And if they have one men's Hell in a Cell and one women's Hell in a Cell, that would be the women's Hell in a Cell. Because there ain't no other women's match that even belongs inside the cell. This one you can make an argument for because it is a long-term grudge feud and you have the Judgment Day. So in theory, the cell, and we know this doesn't always work out like this, but theoretically, the cell would be good to keep out the other members of the Judgment Day. So if they wanted to do more than one cell match, I'm just saying, it really should just be Punk and McIntyre. But if they did more than one, this match is going to be that match. Meanwhile, it looks like Priest and Balor are on a collision course, also probably for Bad Blood to have their first singles match. I have to think that would be the direction, because how much longer can they put that match off for? And then we had the main event. That's the thing about these five-match PLEs. You get through them real fast. You got Gunther defending the World Heavyweight Championship, his first defense, against Randy Orton. This was a rematch from the finals of this year's King of the Ring tournament. I want to mention this because I'm sure a lot of people either didn't bother with it, maybe they don't know about it. Michael Cole did about a 10-minute sit-down interview with Randy Orton. They aired it on the pre-show. And you don't even have to go to Peacock. It's up on their YouTube channel. Go check it out. I thought it was really well done. I'd like to see them do more interviews like this. Michael Cole is, you know, he's very good at stuff like that. And Orton is just very open. You know, obviously, it's a mix of kayfabe and reality here, but I thought it was just really well done. So people may have skipped over it because it was on the pre-show, but it's worth, even now that the show's over, I think it's worth just taking 10 minutes to go check it out. Orton coming into this match was looking for his 15th world championship. He's a 14-time world champion right now. He is tied all time in WWE with Triple H. If he wins his 15th world title, he owns the number two spot all to himself. And he is second only to Ric Flair, because they acknowledge Flair as having 16 titles. So that's the number we'll go with. And John Cena in WWE is also a 16-time world champion. So Orton was trying to make history and inch that much closer to the two of them. The crowd loved Randy Orton. All these international crowds, they love Randy Orton. Nobody in all the years that Randy Orton has been doing this, 20 plus years, nobody ever sang Randy Orton's song. No crowd ever sang Randy Orton's song until he went to France. He was blown away by this. He couldn't stop talking about it. He was amazed by this. And now it's caught on, and a lot of other crowds now sing his song, but it goes back to that international show they did back in May. So now, of course, he comes out, and you have all the fans here in Berlin, and they're singing his song. And as much as they loved him, they loved Gunther just as much, maybe a little bit more. Once they were in the ring, Samantha Irvin did the introduction for Orton, and then the camera panned over, and we saw Ludwig Kaiser, who got to wrestle in front of his fellow countrymen on SmackDown last night in this very building against LA Knight. He accepted the U.S. title open challenge. So I was very happy he was able to get a match in Berlin. And he got to make an appearance here on this show. He did the introduction for Gunther. And it was very appropriate, too, because not only are they together, you know, in WWE, and they were together in NXT, these two are friends from when they first started in wrestling. They've been friends since they were like teenagers. And you go back and look at photos of them when they were younger. First of all, Gunther is unrecognizable. I mean, the physical transformation in this man is just incredible from then to now. But when you know the backstory and you know that they have been friends for so long, it's very cool to see them both out there here in the main event, getting that kind of reception from the crowd. So the match begins. It is a party atmosphere to start things off. The fans started a wave. It's been a while since I have seen a wave on a WWE show. But the fans start a wave. This is not the first time the fans have started a wave during a Randy Orton match. I should know because I was in the building the last time it happened. But it was Orton and it was Sheamus. And we were just so bored by what was going on the show. The fans just started a wave. And it just took on a life of its own, and it sparked this great debate about whether or not it was disrespectful and all that, but the fans in the building were so fucking bored. So they started a wave that night for very different reasons. Here, the fans were just very happy. They were very happy and very excited for this match. Randy Orton even wanted to get in on the action. He stopped what he was doing. He looked around. He started doing a wave himself. He was so happy. I said earlier, Orton spent at least 65% of this match looking around and smiling and acknowledging and just admiring how great of a crowd this was. This is a very different Randy Orton from many, many years ago. This is a Randy Orton that seems to be very reflective and very appreciative every time he goes out there. And look, when you miss 18 months and you have fusion surgery and you think your career is over and you may never get to do this again, I'm sure that also gives you a different perspective. Yeah, you know, plus he's a family man now, and he's a lot calmer than he used to be. He's not, you know, the Randy Orton douchebag that we heard all those stories about. I mean, it's been almost 20 years. So now he's able to kind of sit back and appreciate the finer things here. He's also said, and he said it in the sit down with Michael Cole, he really likes being a babyface. So for all of us who think that the inevitability here is that he goes heel to wrestle Cody Rhodes, I don't know. I mean, if he has a say in the matter, he may not want to go heel. He seems to be having a lot of fun just being a babyface. So anyway, we were 5 minutes into this match and nothing happened. I mean, it was mostly just, you know, the crowd and these two feeling each other out. 5 minutes in, nothing really happened. Orton spent most of that time just, again, trying to get a handle on Gunther. He reversed him into the ring steps on the outside. And Gunther starts selling the arm. Really, the right wrist. Like he may be injured. And at that point, Orton zoned in on that. Unlike Kevin Owens. He dumped Gunther four times. One after the other on top of the announce desk, which did not break. And then he got him back into the ring. Orton hit a superplex, came up though clutching the back of his own head. We got a chop battle that ensued between these two. Then it turned to punches. Gunther was gaining the advantage, and so Orton thumbed him in the eye. We got a little bit of the old Randy Orton, some old school. Little thumb to the eye there. The draping DDT to Gunther followed, and then he set up for the RKO. Gunther, though, caught him and delivered a German suplex. Gunther stalked him. He waited. Then he hit a shotgun dropkick. He went up to the top rope. He hit a big splash off the top, and he used his left arm. He used the one good arm to try to hook Randy's leg. Orton kicked out. Gunther tried for the powerbomb. His arm gave out. Grabbed the injured wrist. Tried for a second time. Again, right back down. So he went to the well for a third time, and again, he had to set Orton down. It took four tries. On the fourth attempt, he picked him up and he powerbombed him. Covered Orton. Randy kicked out at 2.9. Gunther again tried for another powerbomb. Couldn't pull it off. Orton caught him with an RKO out of nowhere. The fans go nuts. So he covers Gunther. Gunther kicks out. That was a great near fall. Very close. It's a great near fall. Orton headed to the floor. He removed the cover to the German announce desk. And he clears off the announce table. Then he looks over and he spots the ring steps. They're sitting there. They're overturned from earlier when Gunther got sent into them. Michael Cole pointed out he can't use the ring steps, though, because he'll be disqualified. Well, I mean, he'll be disqualified if he brings them in the ring. But technically, he can use them on the outside because they're part of the ring. We see people throw other wrestlers into the ring steps all the time, and there's no disqualification. It's like throwing somebody into the ring post on the outside. When's the last time you saw somebody get disqualified for throwing their opponent face first into the ring post? Right? Never. It doesn't happen. Because it's all part of the ring. But he takes the steps. He doesn't bring him into the ring, which would have been a DQ. He slowly slides them over right in front of the German announce desk. Gunther rolls to the floor. He ends up getting dropped backwards on the flat part of the ring steps that Orton just dragged over. The way that Orton usually picks the guy up and drops him on top of the announce desk, he did that to Gunther on top of the steps. Now, Orton was still selling the effects of that one powerbomb that he took, as he should, because this is a man who missed 18 months of his career for having basically a broken back. Right? He had a couple of ruptured discs in his back. He had fusion surgery. So he's selling the effects. Orton grabs the top part now of the ring steps, very gingerly places them back on top of the bottom parts, and now we have a full staircase again. Split crowd at this point. We got chance of Randy Orton. We got chance of Let's Go Gunther. I should say, you know, at this point, this basically turned into a no-countout match because Randy Orton alone, let alone Gunther, he was out there for like 5 fucking minutes. Okay. There's no way that the referee was putting on any kind of a count. He just gave up. Charles Robinson's like, you know what? This match ain't ending by count out. So I'm not even going to try. Because at this point, I was like, boy, you know, Randy's been out there for an awfully long time, and this is not supposed to be no count out, but that's basically what it is. So Randy stood on top of the steps. He dumped Gunther through the German announce desk. Finally, one of the announce tables is destroyed. So Orton gets him back inside, sets up for the RKO. Gunther shoves him off, and Orton took another bump on his back in the process when he missed the RKO. Gunther snuck up behind him, locked in the sleeper hold. Now, Orton eventually was able to break free, but Gunther chopped him in the back of the fucking neck. And then he locked the sleeper back on. Orton got Gunther on his back, meaning he had him on his back and then fell backwards to break the hold. But not for long, because as Randy now is sitting there trying to get his bearings about him, Gunther pops up like some fucking movie villain, and immediately cinches the sleeper hold back on. He's got his legs wrapped around Orton's body this time, and he ain't letting go. And so Orton eventually passes out. Charles Robinson checks the arm, immediately calls for the stoppage, and Gunther is still the world heavyweight champion, to the surprise of absolutely no one. But he is still the champion. And unlike King of the Ring, this was a decisive win for Gunther. Orton didn't get pinned, nor did he submit. He just passed out. But it was a decisive win, unlike their first match. Randy Orton keeps his streak of PLE losses alive. He remains winless here in 2024. I thought this was a very good main event. Maybe a few minutes longer than it needed to go. If it were up to me, I would have shaved some time off of this. They went 35 minutes. I mean, it reminds me of some of these Okada matches that he had in New Japan. Some of them were very long, and they were classics, and I wouldn't change a thing about it. Okada, though, had a tendency to have other matches that went longer than they had to. It was very self-indulgent sometimes. Like, you know, okay, I have my formula. This is what we're going to do. It's going to be an all-time classic. And it would go 38 minutes, and it's like, this didn't have to go more than 25. That's kind of how I felt about this. This went 35. They probably could have had about the same length as the Cody and the Owens match, maybe 25 minutes. So you could have shaved a good 8 to 10 off of this thing. I get it was the main event, and yeah, the fans wanted to see these two guys. I thought it went a little long. The selling in this match, though, was absolutely fantastic. I just cannot say enough good things about the story they told, just based on that alone. Gunther, even after the match was over, when the referee went to go raise his hand, you know, he's like, don't touch the wrist. So he was selling the arm all the way through. Orton with the back. Orton is very good at this anyway. Just moving around gingerly and just the pained expression on his face. You could tell a story just through that alone. So I thought they were masterful here. Both of them were. And I really enjoyed this match. Better than their King of the Ring match, for sure. And again, with a decisive finish. Randy Orton now gets shipped off back to SmackDown. The only reason he was even challenging Gunther was because of what happened to King of the Ring. Triple H had promised that we would see a part two, so he gave us part two. And now Orton goes back to SmackDown. Gunther moves on to whoever the next challenger is going to be for his championship. I don't know who that's going to be. You know, is it going to be Jey Uso? Is it going to be Sami Zayn? Is it going to be Ilya Dragunov? You know, they're having a tournament right now to crown a number one contender for the Intercontinental title. What they're going to do with the World Heavyweight Championship, I don't know. But when the show was over, I thought it was a fun way to spend 3 hours. The matches were all good to very good, but there is, I think, going to be an issue with these shows if they continue with this format going forward, where they're just constantly going to be as predictable as they are, where it feels like nothing major ever really happens. I do think at some point that will wear thin on people. But as long as they can continue to find markets all over the world that they haven't run major shows in before, you will continue to see records broken. You will continue to see new gate records set. You will continue to see hot crowds like the one we had here in Germany. The crowd in Berlin was great. I don't know if they quite match the crowd in France. think I give the edge to the crowd in Lyon. But Scotland, you know, Germany, France, there's talk about maybe doing a show in Italy next year. Cody on the European tour the other night was teasing a possible PLE in Belgium. So there's a lot of other places they've never visited before for a major show or for TV. And I'm sure if they ran there, the people would just slurp up whatever shit Triple H wanted to spoon feed them, whether it was good or not, just because WWE right now is the hot ticket. But how long will that continue on for? How long can they carry this momentum on for? Because it really does. It just feels like as fun as these shows can be, it's sort of like, I don't know, it's kind of like almost like a glorified episode of Raw or SmackDown sometimes with some loaded matches. But look, I had fun with this. Let's take a look at the poll and see what you guys thought. Clearly, you guys are in agreement because right now we have a score with almost 1,500 votes in. 83% thumbs up for Bash in Berlin, 11% thumbs in the middle, and 6% thumbs down for this show. Hey, Ty Arts, you have been fined by Brian Danielson. Thank you. Thank you for the super chat. And that is the Bash in Berlin. Now they come back to the States where we get crowds that half the time are sitting on their hands or doing the what chant. I fucking hate these crowds. Maybe they could all be international crowds. That would make me happy. Tell you what, these international crowds, they blow the U.S. crowds out of the water. I will give them their props for sure. All right, let's take a look at your messages here. Thank you, guys. You guys have sent in some bombs here, which I love to see. The Real CS said, I've always wondered, since WWE moved away from traditional pay-per-views and are on a streaming service, do they still have to worry about going off the air at a certain time like they do on TV? Yes, they do. Because in some international markets, they do air on pay-per-view. They air on pay-per-view here. I know it seems wild, but they are still on pay-per-view here in the U.S. But I think in a lot of international markets, they are as well. And you have to have an out at a certain time. So yeah, they can't just go as long as they want to. They do have some limitations. Power Spying Games. I can't stand the red and green light strap matches. It is a little ridiculous. I mean, they must think we're fucking idiots. Like, we can't keep track of what's going on. We need a visual aid. Oofman Entertainment, is Batista in a new movie? I don't think Cole mentioned it enough times, so I'm very curious. Oh, you mean you didn't see the name of the movie plastered all over the barricades during the McIntyre match? Well, to be fair, the reason is McIntyre is in the movie. So that's why they were promoting it. Chris Mikesell, congrats on the win, CM Punk. You do realize you just kissed Drew's balls. Oh, the bracelet. I was like, wait, did I miss something here? That's right. McIntyre did pull the bracelet out of his trunks. And then CM Punk went and kissed it. So CM Punk now is connected to Drew McIntyre in ways that I don't think any of us could have imagined. We just thought he was going to be connected to him by his wrist from the leather strap. But now he's connected to him in a very different, more personal way. The Real CS says, loved how Randy played the heel in the main event. Yeah, I mean, outside of the thumb to the eye, I mean, it was pretty standard Randy Orton. I wouldn't say he was overtly going heel, but yeah, there was a little heelishness there. OM2 Cool, incredible selling by the Ring General. A lost art. Feels that way, doesn't it? Ossie Nandos. Gunther against Orton was fantastic. Some callbacks to Orton against Benoit, with them shaking hands when Benoit and Orton shook hands. Yeah, I forgot to mention that when the match was over, the two of them shook hands, and it was Gunther who put his arm out, put his hand out for the shake, and Randy Orton accepted it, so we had a show of sportsmanship at the end of their match, which was very nice to see. Holiday 197 Hey, Solo, we could have had a swerve with Owens turning heel and stealing the WWE title. He has been a WWE workhorse for a decade, and it would have been nice to see him get a run. Cody could have won it back in a few months. Well, I mean, look, I wouldn't give up on that so quickly, because I do think a turn is coming. I think they're saving it for that first SmackDown on USA, and I do think that we're going to get a rematch. I don't think he's going to win the championship. I think Orton is probably going to be the one to... If anybody is going to do it before we get Cody and Rock, it would be Orton, I think, over Owens. But I know we're not done with this. There's no way we're done with this yet. So I would let it play out a little bit more. I'm not upset that they didn't do the turn if there is going to be one tonight. I think that you could definitely save it for a few weeks. Joseph Brooks, buy or sell on who is better for the respective companies as a monster, babyface, and comedy character. Kane in WWE or Abyss in TNA? Kane. I loved Abyss. But Kane in WWE. Corey Blake with the 15. Hey, Solo. Loved the Punk versus Drew match. The storytelling was amazing. Also loved the fact that Gunther, as a heel, never needs anyone to help him win his matches. I hope to see a heel Kevin Owens soon. Yeah, that's one of the things I like also about him. He's not your traditional sort of chicken shit WWE heel. He stands on his own 2 feet. Only one time can I really honestly remember like Kaiser or somebody getting involved. It was a match that he had on Raw with Sheamus. Other than that, you generally do not see anybody getting involved. You don't see him cheating. You don't see him using weapons. It's refreshing. Ty Arts. Gunther equals future legend, but RKO should have won tonight. Nah, I disagree. I don't think he should have won. And Gunther already is a legend. He's certainly a legend in Europe. Natasha Rigby. Hi, Solo Monster. Hello, Natasha. Here's to no more Fox after next week and use this for confetti and streamers to celebrate. Natasha, thank you. I'm telling you, man, we're going to have a celebration. Ty Arts with the 6. Whose world title reigns were more forgettable, Charlotte Flair or John Cena? P.S. Can this be WWE's best era when the music fucking sucks? Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, that is probably the worst thing about this era. Charlotte Flair. I'm going to say Charlotte Flair, because I don't remember much, frankly, about most of her title. I mean, she's got 12 or 13 title wins already. I mean, I barely remember any of them. I really don't. Adrian Pfeiffer, it feels like all of Cody's matches have been filler so far. Do you think Triple H is being handicapped in booking Cody because The Rock is looming and can disrupt things whenever he feels like it? I mean, that might be part of it. I do think you have this specter of The Rock hanging over things, and I don't know that they have him 100% locked in for WrestleMania next year for a match with Cody, so I'm sure it definitely has an impact on what their long-term plans are for him. I don't think you could just blame it on that, though. I think, you know, Triple H bears a lot of the responsibility for not having enough top heels lined up for him to work with on SmackDown. And that's why we're sitting here talking about Kevin Owens and Randy Orton possibly turning, because there's no one else. That's not The Rock's fault. That's squarely on Paul Levesque. Face Beerus, can you play the final countdown for your outro? Nope. Unless you drop a gigantic super chat on my ass. Ty Arts, you sometimes cover movies. Your favorite director ever, your favorite actor ever. P.S. Hot take, Grayson Waller is the best wrestler currently active. Well, that certainly is a hot take. My favorite director is John Carpenter. Big fan of his work. I love so many of his movies. There's so many classics. His just the vibe, the music, the score for so many of his films. I love it. I don't know if I have a favorite actor. I don't think I have a favorite actor ever. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, but Carpenter is my choice for director. Derek J. Speaks says, if they do heel KO and Cody at Bad Blood, would you have Kevin win the belt? Or would you prefer a heel Randy do that instead? I would prefer heel Randy do it. That's just me. Temjin Zephyr, what's going on, Temjin? F that tree. Thanks, guys. That's right. Ooh, Denzel. Denzel Washington, you know, Denzel Washington's a good choice, man. Denzel Washington is a good one. The real Blair Dior. Actually, you know what? I'll throw another one at you. John Candy. I love John Candy. I miss him. I really do. John Candy is definitely, if he's not my favorite, he's definitely a favorite of mine. And it's a damn shame that he's not around today. The real Blair Dior, though, says, how do you feel about Zilla being the HOG Crown Jewel Champion? Well, I think that for him, it's a big deal because it puts him right in the spotlight now in a way that he hasn't been before. And we're going to find out how good he is because he's got his first title defense coming up this Thursday against Mustafa Ali in Chicago. So, you know, he's been put in a big position here. And now we're going to see how he delivers. Because he's still very young. He's still getting started, really. Barely 2 years even in the business. When he won that championship at our last show, that was his 20th match. Right? I mean, he's only getting started. But sky's the limit, I think, for him. Tyard says, time to say something nice about Impact. They saw Matt Hardy's potential and pushed him as a main eventer. Also, superkick or spear? Spear. I mean, both of them have been completely just bastardized, but I'll go spear. Do you remember that, huh? On the podcast when I used to do that? Time to say something nice about Impact. Boomerang. Rest in peace, Fat Man Scoop. New York City lost a legend today. Yeah, you know, it's sad too because he passed away during a live performance on stage. Well, he didn't pass away then, but he, you know, he dropped. Best way I could put it, had his medical episode. And yeah, he ended up passing away, so that was very sad. Ty Art says, there are no good or bad wrestlers, only good or bad booking. What are your thoughts? No, there are bad wrestlers. Whoever said that was probably a bad wrestler who said that. Number two, The Rock's best movie equals Southland Tales. You should check it out. I did, after it came out. I can't tell you that I remember too much about it. I'm not even sure I necessarily agree, although that's probably one of his better ones. He did a movie, and again, I always forget the name of it, where he was a trucker. Fucking name of that. I can't ever remember the name of that movie. That was a good one, and I know people are going to just think I'm crazy, but I may be one of the few. And he wasn't the lead in the movie, Carl Urban was, but I enjoyed Doom. There, I said it. I'm not telling you it's a great movie. I'm just saying I enjoyed Doom. Instant regret. That's what I feel sometimes after these streams. Thank you for the $5 super chat. My buddy and I scored front row tickets to Hog in Chicago for September 5th. Pretty stoked for a night of great wrestling. Can't wait. You're in for a treat, man. It's going to be a hell of a show. We are now all sold out first. Well, all sold out first three rows. The only tickets left are general admission. So if you want to come to the show, hogwrestling.net, I wouldn't wait. I wouldn't wait too long. Ty Arts. Should Gunther be the one to retire Brock Lesnar? Well, you're assuming Brock will be back. I assume he will be at some point. Sure, why not? I mean, I don't really care either way, but I think that'd be fine. Samuel Hayworth with the 13. Since Stone Cold got a cat, Well, let me fix that for you. He has two cats. He has Pancho, and now he has Macho. Do you think he realizes that he is not the biggest Hellraiser on Earth? He called Pancho a motherfucker on his stream, and we all know cats love to watch the world burn. He's always putting over Pancho on these streams, man. Pancho the Wonder Cat, man. He's something else. I'm loving Stone Cold the Cat Dad. I think it's great. I do worry, though, because he's had other cats before that have been killed. He's got all kinds of predators, you know, on his property there, because he's on a ranch now in Nevada. And he's got everything. He's got chickens and cats. And I don't know if he still has... he had like a chocolate lab. I don't know if he still has that dog or not. But there's always wolves and foxes and things that are, you know, snooping around there. And I'm always so worried that, you know, he's going to let Pancho out one day and he's not going to come back. But I think Pancho could hold his own. Base Beerus HBK had a great sharpshooter. One night he did, yes. Donovan D with the 999. Thank you, Donovan. Is it too much to ask for American crowds to be like the crowds overseas? The weekly shows would be much better. Well, I mean, if you give them a show to be excited about, then they'll be like the international crowds. You know, there are times where they get a very boring show and they get tons of commercial breaks. They just sit there during the commercials. It's hard to keep the energy up in the same way that you do during a pay-per-view because you have so many breaks in the action. The Barf Nuggets, 24. Two opponents I would like to see John Cena face next year, Sheamus and Rey Mysterio. Wild card pick would be Ricky Starks. Carmelo Hayes has already called his shot. He wants to get John Cena in the ring. Matt Cardona has said he wants to wrestle John Cena. Everybody is going to come out of the woodwork and want to wrestle John Cena. Avatar, 1977. Liked how the strap match was a proper fight. It was more of a proper fight than it was at SummerSlam. So that's one thing I liked about it. Ty Arts, again, appreciate you, Solo. Been a fan for almost 5 years since Royal Rumble 2020. Thank you for all you do. Keep up the great work and take it easy. Ty Arts, I appreciate all your super chats tonight, man. Thank you for sticking with me now for 4.5 years. I love it. That was a great Royal Rumble match, too. Then the world went to shit. The Juliet 316 Bad Blood to start at 6 p.m. WWE announced so we can end before UFC's pay-per-view begins. Yes, I did see that, so be aware of that. Bad Blood, October 5th. That's a Saturday. I should know because that's the day before my birthday. It will not be starting at its usual start time. It will be starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. So be aware of that. Nail with the $5. I know Punk has been putting on muscle, but this is the best shape I can remember seeing him in since the 2000s, and even then he was slimmer. Much love, Solo. Well, hey, as long as he doesn't put on too much and tear something, you know, he knows his body. I don't want to see him get so big that he gets hurt. Because remember, 2 matches so far, he's been able to stay healthy. But yeah, this is the best shape he's been in a while. Spartan Sprinkles. Priest and Rhea should win the tag team titles because why not? Yeah, why not? Okay, that's fine with me. You don't think Rhea Ripley couldn't kick JD McDonough's ass? Come on now. The Real CS. Why does WWE only acknowledge 16 of Ric Flair's world title reigns while other wrestling companies acknowledge his actual record? Because that's the number they wanted to settle on so that one day somebody can break it. I think that was the same number they were acknowledging in WCW, though, also. West Coast James with the 12 says, this is therapeutic. Talking about the learning tree. Super chat. Yep, October 6th. October 6th. Not only is that my birthday, I guess that's a Sunday, right? So I got to stream the night before, and then I got a podcast to do the next day. So There goes that weekend. Alex with the 10. Brothers Solo, this will be the first time since 94 where WWE will not host a pay-per-view in September. Do you think the reasoning is they want the September 13th SmackDown to not be overshadowed by a pay-per-view and feel important? Could be. I didn't realize it was that long since they didn't have a show in September. That's kind of crazy. So it's possible, but I also wonder if we had two shows in August. And I think that may have had more to do with it than anything else. The fact that on the very last day of August, they had a PLE. And then pretty early in October, first week in October is the next one. And maybe they just wanted a longer gap to be able to promote matches for that show. I think that probably has more to do with it than anything else. Pisco 95. If they do Cody and KO again at Bad Blood, do you think they could have KO win the title? Cody can win it back at Crown Jewel or War Games. It would make the rivalry more exciting and unpredictable. I mean, were it not for the Randy Orton factor, I'd say sure, but I would rather, if anybody's going to beat him for the belt and then have Cody win it back later on, it should be Cody and Orton trading it back and forth. I don't think you do that with Owens and then do the exact same thing with Randy Orton. That's the only thing holding me back from saying, okay, I agree with you. The Mount Vernon kid, Christopher Bennett, says, Finn sold Damian's kick like he was shocked. He did. He didn't see it coming. So maybe he was. Alex says, as we are approaching the latter half of the year, do you see Cena kickstarting his 2025 retirement tour at the Royal Rumble or sometime this year? I think he kickstarts at that first Raw on Netflix. Or the Rumble. I guess we don't know the date. Do we know the date for the Netflix debut in January? Well, I mean, it's got to be before the Rumble, right? Because the Rumble next year is in February, right? Isn't it like February 1st? It's like the latest Royal Rumble they've ever had. So yeah, so the Raw on Netflix debut comes first. I think he kicks it off there. Warhawk Rambo. What other places could WWE have a show? Austria, Switzerland, maybe Poland. I don't know how big the wrestling crowd is in Poland. I think that Italy, Spain, trying to think of other European countries. That might be good. Because we've had the UK plenty of times. We've had Germany now. France. I think Italy is a safe bet. I do. We've had Australia, right? We had Elimination Chamber there this year. I don't know. What about Denmark? It's a lot of different places they can go. January 6th is the Raw debut on Netflix. So there you go. That's where you kick off Cena's retirement tour. Mexico. That's right. Yeah, Mexico. We do a Mexico PLE. And what would a WWE show look like at Arena Mexico? OM2 Cool. Did you watch the video about Sid's neighbor, Sid Forever? No, but I think I know what you're talking about. Sid, are you talking about the... what was his name? Oh, God. Shit. I forgot the kid's name. But Sid had a neighbor. I think he might have been special needs. I don't know his entire story, but he was neighbors with Sid. This is back when Sid was in WCW the last time. And he was a wrestling fan. So Sid actually invited him to Nitro. And for like one night, I think he managed Sid. Like he did a promo with him backstage. He came down to the ring with him. I mean, Sid made this kid's life. Like it was a pretty incredible thing. Super Pony, no reason to turn Kevin Owens just to lose again. Well, no, there's a pretty good reason. They need heels. Whether he wins against Cody or not, they still need more heels at the top of the card on Fridays. That's a pretty good reason, I think, to do the turn. Jungle Jesus. Hey, Solomonster. Whose career would you want? Hogan or Stone Cold? I mean, if we're talking just careers, like in-ring careers, I'm going Hogan. I mean, Hogan had a much longer, more lucrative run over how many decades than Austin did? Austin made a lot of money in a very short period of time. Although Austin, I think, has done very well off of t-shirts and residuals since then. But as far as the actual career, just for longevity alone, I would have to go Hogan. We have got, I never will even attempt to pronounce this name. I'll just say Yoey. Should I still be focused on the... I have no idea, dude. I have no clue. I have no clue. You do what your gut tells you to do. That's my advice. Drew McIncock, I miss Titantrons. Do you? Yeah, I do, actually. I do. Venom Kitetsu. Jeremy Irons and Al Pacino, also favorites. Yeah, Jeremy Irons is a good one. Always loved him in Die Hard with a Vengeance. Never saw Lolita, though. But Jeremy Irons is a good choice for actors. Surprised no one said Daniel Day-Lewis. Can't go wrong with James Caan, right? He was another good one. Michael Keaton. Hisco 95, I hope this year's Hell in a Cell does not end in a DQ, or it will be the second one to ruin your birthday. I'm fairly confident that will not happen on my birthday this year. I'm pretty confident that will not happen at Bad Blood. If it does, though, it'll be a review not to be missed. And Juan Ocampo, what the fuck is a bad bunny? I mean, seriously, who comes up with these names? Solomonster's best quote in 2020. Punk strap match in AEW, better than his strap match today. Did he have a strap match in AEW? He was supposed to have one with Ricky Starks, right? But I thought he got fired before that, and then Danielson took his place. You may be thinking of the dog collar match with MJF, which was absolutely a much better match. That was one of the best matches of Punk's career. And OM Too Cool. Thoughts on JBL turning up on TNA? JBL seems to be turning up everywhere. He was in TNA. I think he was at Arena Mexico last week. I saw him standing behind Nick Nemeth. He was in GCW. This guy is everywhere. Better not come calling for Hog. The Learning Sicko. Dr. Bropio. You should watch The Mist on your birthday. I've already seen it. I've seen The Fog. The Mist. Bruce Willis is another good one. Bruce Willis is done with acting, unfortunately. He's not in a great way right now. He's not in a great way. You want to know why he was taking any movie role that would come his way the last few years of his career? We didn't really know the reason, but came to find out later on why that was, because his career was winding down and he was starting to get very limited in what he could do and what he could remember. So, you want to know more about what he's going through, I'm sure you could look it up online, but he's not in great shape right now. And the Real CS with the $9.99. It's late, but I think Bo killed it this past Monday. I know it had to be very emotional for him, being it took 2 days after the... took place 2 days after the one-year anniversary of Bray's death. Yeah, and also keep in mind here that he himself had not wrestled a match in 5 years. It was November of 2019. That was the last match of any kind he ever had. He broke his neck. People didn't know that. You know, Bo Dallas suffered a broken neck, and he was in the middle of training for a comeback, got himself into the best shape of his life, and COVID hit, he got let go. It was like this whole series of unfortunate circumstances. So I'm sure it was emotional for him for a lot of different reasons, even those not having to do with his brother. Base Beerus, any memories of the New York City blackouts? Oh, I remember. I remember the last one. What was it, 2003? 2005? I don't remember, but yeah, that wasn't fun. It was 3 days of being in darkness, in the summer, no less, of course. So no lights, no air conditioning. No traffic lights. Yeah, it was a mess. But it happened more than once. I think I'm thinking of 2003, but I know there was something when I was working in the city, which had to have been years later because I wasn't working in the city in 2003. There was another one, although it didn't go 3 days. But yeah, there have been some not so fun times like that. Jungle Jesus, have you watched the new Alien? I have not. I've heard good things about it, though. For the most part, I've heard good things. I've heard that it's the best one since the second movie, which I still have not seen, which is why I don't want to see this one yet. I don't want to see Romulus until I actually see the second Alien. But for whatever reason, I never saw the second one. I saw the first one. I never saw the second one. I have no interest in the other ones that have come out these last several years. I'd like to watch the second one before I watch the new one, unless you think I don't have to, but I kind of feel like I should. Thank you guys for all your super chat love, David and Jake and everybody else in between, man. You guys are awesome. We are currently sitting at 535 likes, which is fantastic. Let's aim for 550, and let's go ahead and be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
We did a be the booker last night, which almost ended with a 2 out of 3 score until I fucked it all up by picking a stipulation, and then it went from a bell to a buzzer. So we're going to try not to do that. Base Beerus says there was a blackout with Hurricane Sandy in 2011 and 2012. That whole thing is a blur. I don't remember much about there being a blackout. I just remember what a mess that was and all the damage it did. I'm not right by the water, so I wasn't as directly affected by it as some friends I know. It was bad. It took years. It took years for people to rebuild in some cases and really kind of climb out of that rut. I could just imagine there's all the insurance claims and everything. People were fighting to try to get money, and it was terrible. All right, here we go. We're going to begin here. And how's this for a team? Vampiro and the Great Muta. Do you remember when they were the WCW World Tag Team Champions? I'll bet many of you don't. I barely do. A very interesting team, certainly, to begin. Vampiro and the Great Muta. Going to be taking on the Dream Team of Greg the Hammer Valentine and Brutus the Barber Beefcake. The Dream Team against Vampiro and the Great Muta. No. Not for me. Sorry. I thought about it. I'm not interested. I like Muta and all, but that just doesn't do it for me. All right, women's be the booker. We have Medusa, or Alundra Blaze, however you know her, whatever name you want her to go by. Medusa going to go one-on-one with Taya Valkyrie. All right, all right. We're warming up here. We're warming up a little bit. I think that could be a good one. I feel like that would be, maybe that one would be a little stiff. I kind of feel like. Men's be the booker. Men's be the booker. Here we go. Oh, man. We have The Miz. You could already sense where my finger is going to go. And it's not in her. Now, look, I mean, maybe we land on one that allows us to pick a different one. There's some stipulations in here. You never know what you're going to land on here. I don't like where this is headed, though. This is not good. We have The Miz. One-on-one with who? People saying instant buzzer in the chat. The Miz one-on-one with CM Punk. The man who once upon a time tweeted back at The Miz and told him to go suck a blood-covered dick in Saudi Arabia. True story. CM Punk and The Miz. Well, that was a disappointment. Certainly not our best performance there in Be the Booker. Thank you for all of the support here on a Saturday afternoon coming off of last night. Getting a lot of content out of me. You get a podcast tomorrow, too. That'll be episode 877 of the Sound Off, so I hope you'll tune in for that. Back live with you on Labor Day because the work never ends. Monday night, the Bash in Berlin post edition of Monday Night Raw. I will see you guys there. Until then, take care.